Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are in the studio, and sitting in for Jim DeBacchus on the political left is Representative Angela Romero. Welcome, Angela.
Hey, how are you?
You have been on the program before. Always nice to have you back.
Yes, I have. My personality isn't as colorful as Jim, but...
Thank goodness.
You're here. We'll take
it.
And sitting in for Dan McKay on the right, State Senator Todd Weiler. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks, Natalie. It's a pleasure to be back.
Todd is sporting crutches, had knee replacement
surgery. Just a few days ago.
Has his...
Don't tell my doctor I'm
phenomenal
here.
Phenomenal wife, Elizabeth, in the studio with us. Welcome,
Elizabeth.
She
had to drive me.
Nice to have you. And there is plenty of hot news in hot July.
Hot air.
And hot air in the studio. Let's talk for a minute about, we just had the 4th of July this week, and about fireworks and these fires. I just got to tell you, I wonder sometimes what the legislature is doing approving all these fireworks that fly so high in the sky and cause property damage to our state.
You know, I've gotten more complaints in the last week about our fireworks ordinances than I have probably in the last 5 years combined. I opened a bill file last May to revisit our fireworks laws. And quite frankly, I know that there were some grass fires and stuff that were started last night. But these big fires like Brian had, these are not being, started by fireworks. The potential, I guess, is there. And it's such a delicate balance because on one hand, people are like, hey, this is America. This is our birthday. Why can't we celebrate? On the other hand, people are saying, I can't sleep. My kids have, this veteran has PTSD. My dog, is going crazy, or my kids have disabilities. I mean, it's really, when does your freedom encroach upon my freedom? And I do think we've gone too far. I think a lot of people are at the boiling point.
So. Yeah. Angela, what's your take on fireworks? And
mine is similar to Senator Weiler. My constituents would like to see, majority of them would like to see a ban completely and just have public
displays.
Displays and fireworks. My concern, again, is like him, is like really reevaluating the law and ensuring that we're not having people displaced like we saw in Midville and in other places, Cottonwood. Because people were a little bit careless where they lit their fireworks, knowing that we're really dry right now.
Yeah. You know, my brother is a physician. He talks about being in the emergency room on the 4th and the 24th and what that's like, the things that come in. And I don't remember the details, I'll just be honest about that, but from the political middle, I would just say that I liked it when we allowed fireworks, but we didn't allow the ones that went over like 10 feet off the ground. I thought there was a balance there.
And I think a lot of those
shooting ones that go into someone else's property.
I think a lot of those that you're seeing are still illegal in Utah, but they're legal in Wyoming, and that's the issue. And, we can't make something double or triple illegal. And people are certainly
that's a good Weiler quote.
violating the law. And, it's hard for the police because there's literally thousands of people doing it at the same time.
I think another concern that's raised and been raised to me is the air and what happens after that. And how does it impact people's health? And so those are things that we have to take also into consideration.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, we also had the news that our Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox will not release any data except for the public information in the election files to the Trump's Election Integrity Commission. I'll bet you applauded that, Angela.
Yes, I was clapping really loud, just like DeBacchus would. I have concerns with why... Number 45, our president, Mr. Trump, would want to seek this information. My concerns are voter suppression more than anything else and putting the fear in people so they're afraid to vote and scapegoating people because of, quote unquote, their status when many of us here in this country with the last name Romero or Garcia have been citizens and have been here for a very long time.
Yeah. Todd, do you have any different take
on
that?
Well, I will say at least he's releasing some data. Some other states, including red states, are saying we're not releasing
anything.
No go.
Huh.
And, I've read some media accounts. I don't know if they're true. I have not independently verified that they even want to know how a person voted. I certainly think that would be inappropriate. I think every major study, across the political spectrum, has found that although there are some instances of voter fraud, they're very small and they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Trump has kind of extended himself out there with these tweets saying that there were 3 million illegals who voted in the election. That's not true. And every state could give him everything that they have, and that's still not going to be true. So.
And I think he's just, you know, he's brought out a lot of people with the last name Romero Garcia who maybe didn't vote for him, but many of them did as well.
Yeah.
He got a higher voter turnout from the Latino community than Romney did. So
I do think, as a policy objective, I do think we all want safe elections. I think we all want to know that our vote is counted and that there's not some corrupting influence.
Yeah.
So I think that those are worthy policy objectives. You know, the devil's always in the details on how you get there.
But we also want to make sure that we're not putting barriers there for people to vote who are American citizens who have given sacrifice for this country, and they're, because they don't have an ID or something, they're not allowed to vote.
Yeah. Let's take the remaining minutes in this segment and just talk about what's happening at our road home emergency shelter with families and whatnot. There's a lot of talk. There's been a lot of violence. There's been a lot of drug busts. Looks like Todd's a good lead on this. Todd, break it down for our listening audience. What's the latest?
Well, you know, the legislature over the 2016 and the 2017 sessions, and I've been a Senate floor sponsor of some of these bills. We are putting a lot of money, $20, $30 million towards trying to reduce homelessness. And in order to reduce homelessness, you actually have to reduce homelessness.
And you have to have places for people to go that aren't shelters.
And although we haven't built the new shelters yet, that, you know, there's been so much controversy about where they'd be located, there has been extra money allocated to the Road Home and other providers for, and we want to start with families. We want to get families out of these shelters and into, you know, housing. And so so right now what I'm hearing, and I think this can be spun different ways by mm-hmm. different special interests, is the Road Home is going to be cut $2.4 million in funding if they don't get these families relocated by mid-July. Well, first of all, they've known this for a while.
Yeah.
And second of all, the reason they would lose the funding is because they've been giving that funding to relocate these families. So what they're saying is if you haven't met the objectives, you're not going to continue to get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it depends who you're listening to.
You might hear some mixed messages out there.
Yeah.
Angela, how could you add more clarity for our listeners?
And I think Senator Wyler has it down. But really, this is a systemic issue. And if we truly want to address homelessness, we really need to look at affordable housing and ensuring that people have a safe place to go. And we're working hard. I'll have two of the homeless resource centers in my district. And I know there's a lot of frustrated people out there right now. But I can guarantee you the state, the county, and the city, we're trying to all work together. We might have different approaches, but at the end of the day, we're here all to serve the community, and we're doing the best we can.
Mm. I want to commend both of you, again, from the political middle, but just to see the state stepping up and providing funding for this issue. It is unbelievable what a crisis it has become.
And Natalie, I just want our listeners to know, if there were easy solutions, we'd have already done them. This is mm-hmm. very complicated, multi-layered, multifaceted. And I commend Mayor Biskupski and Mayor McAdams and the others who are working so hard to try to solve it.
Angela, I'm sure you echo that.
I do. It's a difficult situation for everyone, and we're doing the best we can, and we can do more, and that's what we're going to do. I know the speaker right now is looking at what more we can do as a state.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. On the political left is Angela Romero, Representative Angela Romero, and on the political right is State Senator Todd Wyler. In our next segment, we'll talk a little bit about Gordon Hayward. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
I'm Todd Wyler on the right.
And I'm Angela Romero on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to give a reminder to our listeners that we do a lot of talking, but we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to post your questions or comments on our Facebook page at KCPW 88.3. You can also email us comments at kcpw.org. I want to ask you, Angela, a little bit about your feelings, the policy issues, your expertise on something that's just been a real scourge on this state in the last few months, and this is this domestic violence.
You know,
it's just been unbelievable.
It has, and, you know, we've been tackling sexual violence, and now we're seeing domestic violence, and Senator Wyler and I and Senator Spendlove are looking at some policy changes and what do we need to do to change the way we approach domestic violence, sexual assault, and how do we ensure that people feel safe. And I'll turn it over to Senator Wyler because I know he's working on some particular legislation, and I'm still working on putting that out. But we've agreed to do some town halls together.
Mm. Yeah. So, there's been several high profile, even another one this week and one 2 weeks ago, you know, high profile murder suicide scenarios. Some have involved children. One child was shot and of a woman, and another, and her other child was killed. It's heartbreaking. And there have been multiple mm-hmm. incidents, and they seem like they're increasing. And so I started off on this over a month ago, just looking at maybe some gaps in our current stalking injunction laws. An injunction is a court order saying you can't come within so many feet of this person. And of course, court orders are pieces of paper, and paper don't stop bullets. But for instance, with this memoré in Draper, had she obtained a stalking injunction, it would not have included her child's school. That's one of the gaps there. And yet that's where, her killer ultimately, found her and then started chasing her from there. So I've opened a bill file, and we're willing to expand
just it. Just to expand the way you can put up a protective order?
Looking for logical things. And these are cases that often have to be decided, on a case-by-case scenario. These are situations mm-hmm. that usually a one-size-fits-all. And we want to make sure the judge has the appropriate amount of tools in the toolbox to apply those. But I'm happy to work. Angela and I have been working together on these issues in the past, and I think we'll continue to work on
that. I got to say, there seems like there's more camaraderie between House, Senate, Republican, Democrat, between the two of you than between Dan and Jim. But just a comment.
Well, they're characters in their own right.
Yes.
Senator Wyler and I he was my sponsor for HB 200, which mandated the testing of all sexual assault kits. And so he and
this
I have found that he's worked with me on a bunch of my legislation, and we partner up together. And that doesn't mean we always agree. There's times where some of his bills come up, like porn, and I'll be the one talking about why I don't support it. But I still have respect for him as a colleague.
Something I've noticed is we always agree when I'm right.
So. But the other thing about domestic violence is we have to really look at how we train law enforcement and what are appropriate methods in which we train just public safety in general on when someone's calling in and the proper questions to ask, and what resources do we have out there in the community for women or men, because it happens to men as well, so that they feel like they're safe. Because at the end of the day, when we're talking about sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking, it's all about power and control. And how do we ensure that the person who is the alleged victim has that power to be able to decide what they need to do to protect themselves and take away that power from the perpetrator?
Yeah. Either of you have any ideas on the root cause of this problem? I mean, I don't know the stats, but Todd, you mentioned it seems like there's more and more. It certainly seems more graphic and more violent. What's behind this behavior?
I don't know. I'm not an expert in that, but I think a lot of it is unmet expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people are not kind to each other. And mm-hmm. I think that builds up over time.
Mm-hmm.
I got an interesting email last week, and I don't want to say something politically incorrect, but it was an interesting email because they saw in the paper that I was working on this, and they said, it's not always like one side is completely blameless and the other side is, sometimes it takes two to tango. But, I obviously, people reach a boiling point, and it's hard to know when that's going to happen. I actually heard on KSL someone had called in on this Memorae one.
Rackley and Draper.
Someone had called in the day before that knew the man who ended up killing himself and said, this person is unstable, and I think he's going to kill himself. He's a harm to himself and others. But, you know, they were calling in a different city, you know, where he lived, and they were trying to warn people. But how do the cops act on that? Because it's kind of this, well, can you arrest somebody because they might do something or someone thinks they're unstable? It really leads to, you know, I talked to the head of the Police Chiefs Association, Tom Ross, who's the chief of police in Bountiful, about this. And he agrees there's probably more that we can do. But ultimately, if people are mentally ill and they're acting erratically
in a free society,
it's hard to say that, you know, we're just going to pass a bill to fix all that.
Angela, do you have some additional color commentary?
And we can't fix everyone. There are people who have certain challenges, whether it's from an environmental factor or they might have a mental health issue. But what we can do and what I'd like to see is do more prevention and bring more awareness. And part of that is talking about healthy relationships and what are healthy relationships when it comes to boundaries, when it comes to dating violence, when it comes to consent. And a lot of times people, when we're talking about healthy relationships, they're like, well, that means comprehensive sex education. I'm like, no, we're talking about healthy relationships and what is healthy. And when you're talking about domestic violence, sexual violence, anything related to that, you're talking about power and control. You're not talking about consent. And so for me, it's starting and bringing more awareness on what is a healthy relationship. And those conversations have to happen in our public schools. And I know a lot of people don't want to agree with me on that, but we need to have those conversations now, because a lot of people might be in a situation where they don't realize it's unhealthy because that's all they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will just say from the political middle, I'm ready for more resources to go to this to be helpful. Hey, we had big news this week, and Angela, you and I mentioned off air, you're not much of a jazz basketball fan, but it was sure big news in this town to see our star, all-star forward Gordon Hayward choose Boston over Salt Lake City. Quick reaction.
My reaction was, you know, I don't care. But
I've now met one person who didn't care about this.
But at the same time, we also have to look at the culture of Salt Lake City and of the state of Utah. And maybe for him and his family, they felt like Boston was a better fit for them.
Mm-hmm. And respect that. He was a free agent. Yeah,
exactly.
You mentioned, Todd, your son was,
my 14-year-old is devastated. You know, Gordon Hayward, he was our biggest star. And what we've seen now is there's a pattern since Stockton Malone. There's now a pattern that we kind of we get this talent, we rise them, you know, we raise them up until adulthood, NBA adulthood, and then they bolt on us. And it's happened time and time again. And it really makes me wonder, is that now our role? You know, and Utah's not, you know, the most lucrative market, you know, and we
don't get as much attention.
Yeah, we heard the Golden State, you know, players complaining about our nightlife here, you know, during the playoffs. But we know that Gordon Hayward's wife, she's a devout Catholic, and you know, Boston's a wonderful
doesn't get any better
wonderful place for Catholics. And you know, my wife and I are actually going to Boston next month, and we're excited about it. So it's hard to take that personal. He's spent 7 years here, but people are crushed, and it's like, well, how can we ever get back to those glory days if we, you know, Paul Millsap did this to us. I mean, you could fill in the blank. There's so many people that, you know, once they leave the Jazz, then they're, you know, and so I am disappointed. Yeah. I'm not a diehard Jazz fan, I'm not surprised because this is kind of what I was expecting.
It's a blow. I just would make the comment that it's hard for me to imagine in the NBA with all of the characters who are owners of NBA teams a better owner than Gil Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to the fact that he walked on that ownership team and everything.
I would agree on that.
Yeah. Amen. Hey, it's midsummer. Any big legislative things you guys want to talk about? What's hot up on the Hill coming from both the left and the right?
You know, we're right now, we're an interim, and so we're just looking at the future. And for me right now, it's just still working on domestic violence and some human trafficking legislation that I'm working with our AG's office. But I'm also looking at ensuring that our prisons are in following federal guidelines. We're one of two states, so I'm working with some different entities now so that we're in compliance. So then there'll only be one state besides us that are not.
Yeah.
So.
Angela, I gotta credit you for the, you know, great work that you do. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
You know, there's rumors that we might have a special session.
Yeah, what would that be on?
I think the main issue would be revisiting this 0.05 legal limit for blood alcohol content. Yet we haven't reached a compromise on that. I think the big brouhaha this summer has been on the separation of powers issue with this special congressional election. So I don't think you'll see anything happen this summer or in a special session on that. But I do expect you'll see a slew of knee-jerk reaction bills next year. Something I'm working on, we are leading the nation. You know, Gary Herbert likes to brag about how we're number one in this and that. Mm-hmm. We're number one in something we shouldn't be, and that is in prison deaths per capita. And I actually met with the mother of a young woman.
People who die in prison.
Who died in prison in Farmington last December. Good she job. Actually came to my house after the surgery because we were supposed to meet at the Capitol. And, you know, her daughter was picked up on a drug violation and was dead within 3 days under suspicious circumstances. And they said she fell off a top bunk and ruptured her spleen and bled all over the place. It doesn't sound right. It was investigated. And I'm not saying that there was a cover-up, but mm-hmm. we have too many people dying in prison. And that's something I'm very interested in. I chair the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And so that's something I'd like to dig into. Now, many of those deaths are suicides, but still, we seem to be leading the nation in per capita deaths of our incarcerated population, and that's something I'd rather not be number one in. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. And I would concur with him when it comes to our jails and our prisons, because when you look at the demographics of who's locked up, people of color were overrepresented in those areas, and so those are of great concerns to me as well. But and also going on the 0.05, I mean, I represent downtown. I represent a lot of areas where some of the, you know, the bars and some of the restaurants are still going, why do we have to have a sign that says this is a restaurant, this is a bar? And explaining that to people that are not from Utah.
You know, I was shopping recently in a store in Cottonwood Heights. You know, when you go to the back of the grocery store where mm-hmm. all the milk is?
Yeah.
And they had a sign on the door and it said, this is not an exit. And I thought, hey, maybe that's where the legislature got the idea, you know. Who knows? You open that milk thing and start climbing through there. So it's always good to let people know, you know.
Well, you know, when I'm out for margaritas, I always, you know, Instagram something and say, you know, maybe I should bring my Mormon friend, a.k.a. Thurston, next time. But I think many of us.
Representative Norman Thurston.
Who sponsored the bill,
yeah.
the
0.05
bill.
He made a comment in the paper that maybe people that are drinkers should bring their Mormon friend with them.
As a designated driver.
So I encourage him to come with me one of these times.
I love it. Hey, I don't know if both of you remember this, but we do gripes on this show and end it out that way. Todd, we're going to go to you because you are ready, I think, with a gripe. And Angela, if you've got one in store, let's do it.
Well, I'm just going to gripe about President Trump. Even though I'm a Republican, I'm tired of the stupid tweets. You know,
yeah.
I don't mind him tweeting.
And you're a social media guy.
Yeah,
so you're a connoisseur here.
You know, he's just throwing, you know, meat to the wolves when you're tweeting about somebody's facelift and just taking these personal shots. I mean, we heard after the election that, you know, about a big Trump and a little Trump, and I'd like to see more of the big Trump.
Yeah.
And I don't mind a president tweeting, and I think it's great that he has an avenue to get his message out. But if his message is a petty, juvenile message, then it's embarrassing to me as a Republican.
And it's embarrassing to me as an American.
Yeah.
Angela.
Senator Wyler stole my gripe, you know.
Was it tweeting? Is it tweeting?
It's our current president of the United States, and I want to see him put his big boy pants on and be the person that I didn't vote for, but represent the United States of America.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Hey, I could jump on that gripe thing, but I'm going to go back to Gordon Hayward. Just because I was thinking about it. And I think we get confused with what the meaning of life is, right? And this, you know, I mean, leave it to me to tell an NBA star how they should approach the meaning to life. But I think camaraderie and a great community, loyalty, love of the game, finishing what you started. I mean, I think all those things are important values. And he could have had, as I understand it, the Jazz were willing to commit to his career, that he could finish his career here and be handsomely paid for it. And instead, he went after the big old championship. And I think championships are overrated. Leave it to me, a non-NBA player, to say that. But
we wanted
that's
him
my
to
gripe.
Stay so we'd have a chance at the championship.
Or just to watch. I would amend something just that he chose us.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys think. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Angela Romero and Todd Weiler. The program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks so much for listening.